He's under our emergency provisions? What is this? Emergency provisions.
I'd like to call the March 21st meeting of Ways and Means to order. Just to note, Legislator Cahill is on Zoom under our emergency procedures. Resolution number 11, requesting enactment of Senate and Assembly bill for New York City Legislature for special second.
I'll second.
Discussion.
We have the. Where the changes were circulated.
I'm sorry, as presented before.
Okay.
All those in favor? Opposed? Okay.
Can I just for confirmation, we're going to have to make the amendments on the floor, correct? And Legislator Cahill, wait, raise his hand.
KO, you want to say something, or are you just voting?
No, I didn't. John, okay. Thank you.
All right.
On the agenda for the May, for the legislative meeting tonight, it has resolution on the 2023, both under 9% and also this is the control.
This is what
Use your mic.
Okay. So the legislative agenda for tonight shows resolution number 11 of 2022 as postponed, and then it also shows it on the agenda as a non-consent resolution. It doesn't seem easy for those both to be true.
And usually that's a temporary because we wait for this meeting to happen.
It's one or the other.
So it was on the agenda for Ways and Means, and you just addressed it?
Correct. Yeah. So they'll take it off. Okay.
It was postponed from last week's meeting.
Oh, it'll be there. It'll be
a non-consent.
Right.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Resolution number 553 establishes a policy to require public notification changes to the Ulster County Area Transit. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second? Okay, a second. Yeah, Legislator Cahill, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
So carried. Resolution number 8, establishes a policy requires the disclosure of name of individuals holding ownership as presented before you.
Motion.
Second, Chair Bartels, discussion? Chair Bartels?
Well, I know that Legislator Maloney, you had suggested that you wanted to put a couple more changes into this in terms of how it would be reported to the legislative clerk. Did that happen?
I was under the impression it was no problem to get it in, so do you know if it's been added? I talked to Vicki about it several times. Hold it until the end of the meeting. Let me go talk to Vicki real quick. All the changes were, in addition to all the work you did, Tracy, was that the names appear in the somewhere in the resolution and in our financial system right now. In our financial system, if I go to Amber and Natalie, all I see is Higginsville Station LLC. In our financial system, it will have those names, but really it makes it foilable for the public and for us. So it is, people are aware who we're doing business with, but I was under the impression, is that it? So it's in. Yes, that's exactly. So that it's in. Do we need to amend it in now, though?
It'll have to be on the floor. Do you mind just reading the language
that
was put in? Thank you.
Where'd you just point at? That it resolved that the names of the individuals as set forth above shall be entered into the Ulster County financial software system and shall be included when any resolution or contract is presented by any Ulster County department for approval by the Ulster County Legislature. Thank you.
And just for reference, I would like to be a co-sponsor on that.
As a main sponsor, yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Resolution number 42, approving the execution of a contract for $400,000 for REPCO.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? Legislator Maloney?
Last meeting, we were told there, didn't they, wasn't there, this is the 400,000?
Mm-hmm.
There was a list of issues that we're going to be going back to the drawing board on. Can we get a rundown of what they were and what has changed?
I asked that this resolution be held in committee on behalf of the executive, who wanted to hold a meeting of the stakeholders, and Legislator Green could probably better speak to this. This resolution got broad support through multiple committees, so but I did not attend that meeting. Legislator Green did. I didn't see you there, so go ahead.
We did hold a meeting.
Drew, can you use your mic?
Oh, sir. We did hold a meeting. It was a very constructive meeting, and I think, as far as I know, all of the county executive's questions were answered. Was that your impression?
I would presume that we would be talking about postponing this if they weren't, so yes.
Yeah. And it has passed the other committees, as far as I know. So it was really just a question of, it's a complicated, there are actually two parts to this, one that had been approved all the way through the legislature for the workforce development, and this was for RUPCO, which is already has a community block grant, development block grant to do repairs, and this is adding the energy efficient retrofit component, and the workforce development is already in place.
Some of them, if I could,
yeah,
I had questions. I don't know when they were answered, but, and I don't recall what the other questions were, but none of them were just said. We're kind of speaking in generality. Some of my concerns, and I remember Ken was chairing Ways and Means a week or two, a couple of weeks ago, and kind of backed me up with his own company. He's separate, but they do oil, like bladders for oil tanks and things like that. When they come in, they do a certain aspect of the job, and then they have another firm come in and check their work, and that brings great oversight and independence to the work. So my issue with this, and I actually went out and spoke to one of the local leading companies that does this kind of work. They were concerned because they had no idea about this. We were told that three companies are going to be hired by RUPCO, and the lucky houses that are chosen for this get to choose one of those companies. Then that company comes in, does the testing. They have these fans and computer systems. They give you a rating, a number. Then they do the work, and then they bring their fans back in and rate their own work. We, after we send this money over to RUPCO, have no oversight over any of this. So how can we be sure that there's equity as far as the kinds of companies that do this type of work? And the company I talked to thought it was outrageous that we didn't have two companies, at least one doing the testing, one doing the actual work, and then testing the work. So none of those questions were answered. Those notes were taken. I was under the impression that they were going to go back and figure that out. But as far as I'm concerned, those questions haven't been answered. I don't know. Have they been answered? Do you recall that from Ways and Means? I think it was Ms. LaValle that you said, yeah, you wrote those questions down and said that you'd look into that too. What happened when you looked into that?
So,
can everybody hear me?
So my understanding was is that the questions actually did get answered in Ways and Means. The building inspector from who's also a legislator was there and explained, I think, in quite some detail about the fact that there was a computer used to do these things and the reports are relied on by that computer coming out of it, and that he relies on those reports himself in terms of issuing the necessary COs under the current building permit situation.
I remember Tom being there for one of the meetings, but I never took it as that was. I think moved on without really being feeling good about it. But I just I just can't believe we're going to spend tax dollars on something like this and let one company do it all. How can it not be better? How could we not be assured the work is going to be done better if the company knew there was a separate company that was going to be checking their work?
I'm simply saying that the fact is that the way these tests are done, they are done by computer, and they produce a report, and those reports essentially are relied on by building inspectors to make sure that they currently meet energy codes. And in this instance, they're going to be relied on in terms of trying to make the determination in terms of energy efficiency.
But don't we want to get the best out of it? I'm not saying, obviously, you could go in and insulate a couple of windows, even if there was no monkey business, and you could get a better number. But if you had someone coming in that was also in the business, go looking after you, the way these kinds of things should be, I don't think anyone would argue that preferably we'd have two companies doing this. It could be done that way, and we're not. This is just not the, I don't think, it'd be hard to believe anybody, especially anybody in the business, would believe that this would be the best way to do this, and that we would, when we exit these homes, many of them old homes, some of these homes are probably 100 years old, and we're, how could you think we're getting, this is the best possible way to do this with one company handling all three aspects of this?
I'm not sure that will be the case. I would basically, what you're saying is that one company that does the work should not be allowed to, essentially, that does the test should not be allowed to do the work. I think what we're saying is that the one company that does the test may or may not be the one that does the work, depending upon what ends up happening with the additional quotes that come behind you.
I see Mr. Litt went up on the screen. He was the one that explained in that meeting that it would absolutely be the same company. I don't know if he wants to pop
it. I believe he said it could be the same company, but the point being,
I recall it being pretty matter of fact it was going to be the same company.
We're looking at the idea that essentially there has to be a BPI certified company to do that. And I know in the past, with respect to some of the clean energy work that's been done by RUPCO in the past, they have used different companies between those that have done the test versus those that have done the work.
Well, it doesn't satisfy me as far as if it's going to be the same company. And secondly, when there's a highly rated company here, and I believe they're out of West Hurley, how they didn't know about this. Now it's county tax dollars. Does equity amongst our businesses in this county matter? Because why they didn't know about this, and how? So once we give the money to RUPCO, RUPCO can go and choose whoever they want. But shouldn't we as a county be more concerned with equity as far as the businesses all having the same right to this? Because these are tax dollars, they're a pass-through. We could almost do this ourselves, but we're outsourcing. Then we're outsourcing and doing it in a way that we wouldn't do it ourselves.
All right, Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I think that the legislator is showing that there is his opinion, and then there's the opinions of all people that do feel satisfied with this. And that includes Legislator Cochran, as I heard him at that meeting as well, which was very important to me, that somebody who is a building inspector sees this as the way that this is done in this industry. And I brought in the consideration that there's, you know, licensure, there's the company's reputation, there's a lot that holds the company to a standard that if they are operating fraudulently would cost them a lot. So yes, you can minimize risk, but you usually do so by increasing other costs, including economic costs, which we were told this would, the approach that Legislator Maloney is advocating for would greatly increase the cost, because you have to bring in one set of equipment and then do the renovations and then bring in something else. So in light of the increase in cost and the fact that it's done this way across the county and is approved by people who are in the trade and makes sense, because there are other mechanisms for holding the company to a high standard, I think we just have a divergence of opinion, and we have the positions well articulated, and we should move on and just let people vote.
Legislator Green?
Well, I think Legislator Nolan more or less made my point, but there will be oversight. Are you raising your hand?
Yes. Sir?
Let's hear from Winkley.
Sure.
I was going to, as you're coming to the mic.
Fortunately, we spoke to the
microphone.
Oversight by
John,
by RUPCO.
Before he goes, just one more quick thing. That was incorrect. Mr. Corcoran said the equipment would all be taken out while they do the work, and the equipment would then be brought in. There would be no save. There's no savings. And
it was just a direct response
to two things she said.
Legislator Green has still got the floor. She's giving it to him.
Okay.
I'll give all right. the floor.
I'll be giving the floor to people here and there from here on out. My experts.
So, Kevin O'Connor with the RUPCO. For about 4 or 5 years, we administered a Clean Jobs, Green New York program for NYSERDA to promote energy retrofits, first, and then do energy retrofits. And the program was set up by NYSERDA, and there are several companies that were certified that were the group of companies that someone could choose from. But once you chose a company, they would come in and test, then they would do the work, and they would monitor their work, again, with the reputation. And I sort of would then do some spot auditing on these companies over time. I questioned it myself at the time. Normally, when we have a scope of work done, we want to go out to bid. In this thing, you're coming on site, you're doing the energy audit, you're up in the attic, you're bringing your equipment on, and if the folks decide to go forward, not everybody did, then the same company did it. And pretty straightforward work, but we ran that program for about 5 years and promoted that. We were the leading promoter. We were in like 9 counties. As far as this, our understanding is tagging on to an $800,000 CDBG grant that we have, the county would like to add $400,000 to do some energy retrofits and do a training. So we're going to try to train some people through Citizens for Local Power, and we have some companies that have stepped up to say that they are willing to do that. This is not approved yet, so we haven't fully promoted it yet. There might be some other companies. Happy to talk to your company. And lastly, I'll just say that we're happy to administer this program however the legislature would like us to administer the program. We're very open to that. Thank you.
Just to clarify, so the comments by Legislator Corcoran were at an ARPA meeting. It wasn't at Ways and Means. And to respond, I guess, in response to what Legislator Nolan said, the Legislator Maloney is correct. It's two separate pieces of equipment. You do your testing first, and I have somewhat experience from the Village of Ellenville. They've done these energy efficiency projects where they retrofitted homes and they've come in. Usually, in my experience, Legislator Maloney is correct. There's usually two separate companies. There's the one who does the testing and one does the work, and they verify that the work was done correctly. So, Legislator Criswell, you were next.
Yeah, just a clarification. This isn't county tax dollars. This is ARPA funds. And of course, we want to use them wisely, but it's been talked about now tonight as county tax dollars, and that's incorrect.
Mr. Robinson.
Thank you, Chairman. Am I right to assume, Mr. O'Connor, that this is an add-on to an existing contract, $400,000? So this didn't go out to bid, this $400,000 was just given to RUPCO to take care of? Am I correct to assume that?
Thank you.
I think we wrote the grant for $800,000 on behalf of the county, and based on our experience, the
county was awarded that grant, and this is ARPA dollars that are looking to be added. They haven't been given to RUPCO yet, so.
Thank you.
Mr. Amelani?
The last thing I'll say, sure we'll end up where we're going to end up, but two things. First of all, to me, that's a scary statement that ARPA funds aren't county tax dollars. They absolutely are county tax dollars. They're going to be spent the exact same way, and they were generated by taxing people from all over the state and country, including Ulster County. They are absolutely county tax dollars, and to treat them differently and act as if we don't have to do the same kind of diligence because it's
that's
ARPA funds, I think that's...
It's not
what was,
all what I said.
What was possibly inferred.
Legislator Criswell.
That's how I took them, and I'm sorry. Did you not say they aren't? They aren't county tax dollars. The last thing I'll say. I've got how many people talking here? Who's got the floor? Thank you. The last thing I'll say is I heard these same arguments about licenses. People are licensed. They'd be putting themselves in danger when a few people in here fought getting a second appraisal over at Paradise Lane. The first one coming in at $4.3 million, the second appraisal coming in at $1.2 million. it's always good to have oversight. We do it in the private sector. That's why Kevin Roberts' business runs a hell of a lot better than Ulster County job sites. Okay? And when we start moving away from that approach, money gets wasted, tax dollars gets wasted, and at times corruptly spent. It's always better to do things right and to have another set of eyes and hold people accountable. That's all I was asking for. If we don't want to, we don't want to.
Ms. Mayor Nolan?
Yes. The statement that it's always better is just a very apodictic statement. It's a statement that says a conclusion, and it seems like everybody should agree with it. But the point that I've been making is that when you do put in a one overriding priority like that, you ignore other costs that come up. So yes, we did save some money with a second appraisal at Paradise Lane, but we lost a whole lot of money by probably months of delay. It may have been worthwhile to do it, but to say that it's always better to go one way or another just sounds good, but it's rarely true in my experience.
Any other discussion?
I'm sorry, sometimes it's not better to have oversight. You're right, there are times it's probably better not to have any oversight in government.
All those in favor? Opposed? I'm actually going to be opposed. Thanks. Resolution 70, Brian was in favor. Resolution 73, establishing a policy to prohibit certain appointees of Ulster County. Second. Chair Bartels. Discussion. Senator Walter.
So I just wanted to say that one of my biggest concerns about this last week got addressed by the attorneys. I just wanted the clarification because technically people who serve on Democratic committee or Republican committee because they do petitioning and can be primary would be considered elected officials, but it was confirmed that in our particular charter there is a definition of elected officials that precludes them. So I'm okay. I just wanted to make sure that was clear that they're not included in this as elected officials. You can serve on a committee.
Legislator Gale.
Thank you. So one of the questions I brought up the last time that this was before us was that there seemed to have been a couple of offices that were excluded from the original law, like the deputy county clerk, who was in direct line to take over for clerk, and was wondering if that was resolved. We did do that in other branches of government where we included them. Thank you.
Yeah, in laws and rules, it was added.
Thank you.
Could somebody address whether elected members of fire boards and school boards are also eliminated from this? Thank you.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Chair Bartels, you're in favor. Yes. Against? All right. Thank you. Resolution 76, establishing a policy requiring consideration of food security initiatives. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second.
Discussion? Let's say Walter.
Yeah, so last time it was postponed because there were several questions that needed clarification. Were those addressed? Mostly, I know mine was sort of a little bit on how this was going to be implemented. Do you know if it was brought up? I know that Legislator Sperry was going to look at it. And
Legislator Gale.
Sorry, I couldn't get off mute there. So one of the questions that I think was brought up again was Ulster County capital projects. Right, for delivering county services. You know, that is a little bit vague for me, quite honestly, because that could be anything. That could be a Department of Motor Vehicles, it could be 911 Center, it could be the highway garage, you know what I mean? And so I'm a little concerned that that's a little bit too vague for what the purpose of and intention of this is. I was wondering, because that was definitely brought up in the meeting. I was wondering if Legislator Sperry had an opportunity to look at it. I'm looking at the resolution. It doesn't look like it was addressed.
Chair Bartels.
Yeah, I think that the specific, it hasn't changed so far as I can tell, but I think that the specific language in there was that the capital projects, and I'm reading from it, proposed after the effective date of this policy, involving construction and development of space utilized for purposes of delivering a county service. So it was less broad than I thought, because I didn't see the specific line, but it still leaves for a little room for interpretation. Like, would the EOC, I think the EOC probably would be required to undergo this, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, but again, it's like, how broad do you want to be? I assume that the fact that it's left as is means that the sponsors want to go broad.
I don't know.
She's here. Megan's here?
I saw her.
Yeah,
Helen
would be great. Do you
want to
move to the next
person? Yeah, she's not here, because as it stands, that'll be a no,
she's
but
here.
If not, okay.
She was just in the legislative office building.
President. You're on the hot seat.
My trouble.
Legislator Cahill, if you want to restate your question again.
Yes, thank you, Legislator Sperry, for coming in. So the question I had was the same question that we had the last time when it came to where the part of the resolve that says Ulster County capital projects proposed after the effective date of this policy involving construction of development of space utilized for purposes of delivering a county service, comma. So, you know, I felt then, and I still feel now, that that's a very broad and not specific enough statement in this resolution, considering that the county, you know, what we consider a service is not necessarily a service. You know, property maps are a service. You know, tax bills are a service. They may not seem like that to us, but they are, right? And so for me, if we're gonna do anything like that, I just think that that should be a little bit more specific to the type of service that the county is providing, right? Because plowing the roads is a service, right?
So are you saying that you want it to be?
Let's recuse your mic.
Are you saying that you want it to be more defined of like what type of services will be required to consider integrating this type of program?
Yes, that's what we said at the last caucus, I believe it was, where we discussed this, that we actually discussed that at length, that, you know, some specificity to the types of services that would be included in this.
Well, I think we also talked about, like, obviously it would be something that would be appropriate for, like, our respite houses or the health center or something that was, like, community-based in that way. We weren't talking about services that were provided for, you know, building bridges or, like, industrial projects. We were talking about it being more appropriate for being tied to the services that, you know, people would be going and getting checkups or affordable housing and having it being integrated in that way.
Right, and that's exactly my point, because that's not how it reads, in my opinion, right now. And, you know, I don't want to be, you know, difficult, but I won't vote yes for this the way it's written. I think it needs to be much more specific in the types of services we're talking about. Because the next thing you know, we're building a highway garage as a, you know, to house one of our four fast vehicles, and we're gonna have to, it's not a bad idea, don't get me wrong, put some sort of food kitchen in the middle of nowhere, right?
Well,
some sort of, you know,
but,
what I mean?
Yeah, but the whole point of having this resolution is for people to consider it, and they're not required to do it.
Well, you know, it does say you know, well, you know what, I'm a vote. And if you don't want to change it, that's okay, I'm just a vote. Thank you.
Legislative Teague.
Could we offer to make an amendment on the floor that would strike service and say funding for a project or projects that includes housing and or mental health accommodations? Would that suit the needs of the, you know, the resolution as intended? No?
Yeah, I think it's a...
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be good with that. I mean, I just think it's just too broad right now. And I really, you know, I thought that when we talked about it last time that we would have an opportunity to maybe sharpen it up a little bit. But, you know, that didn't happen. So if the sponsor does not want to change it, then that's her, it's her resolution. It's Legislator Sperry's resolution. And that's that.
Legislator Walker.
So I'm slightly changing the subject, so I'll let Chair Bartels and Legislator Uchitel go first, because I assume it's on the same piece, so I will go after them.
Thank you. So, you know, last, well now 2 weeks ago, I had some concerns about the broadness, but again, I have to say I misread the resolve, which I said in caucus, to not see this line. You know, I appreciate Legislator Sperry's comment that this is, you know, it's a, in many ways, it's like a permissive referendum, right? It's saying you need to look at this, and if not, tell us why you can't do it. I think what Legislator Petit is suggesting actually goes too far the other way, because when I think in terms of the best practice for this, it would be any building, any capital project, whether it's a renovation or new construction, that has an outward-facing component where the public is coming, whether it's for those tax maps, that would make sense. Like, consider it, you know, consider whether a food pantry in a building like that makes sense. In a building that's going to largely be closed off to the public, like a salt shed, I could see not having food storage there, and also considering that it might be dangerous with trucks coming in and out and so on. But again, if you want to go as broad as possible, in that case, you would say why you, and that would be one of the components of why. So even though I do feel like the language could be tightened a bit, I'm okay with not splitting hairs, because there's that latitude to explain why or not. And it really does raise food security to top of mind, which I think is the intention for all of our projects, which just forces us to have to think about it, at least.
Just so you mentioned splitting hairs, and this maybe, but I don't think it is. I always try to think about what a future legislature could do, and the word, and that's why I actually asked Natalie for the resolution itself, because the word feasible is what concerns me. Feasible has a different definition than reasonable. Feasible, a project could be feasibly possible to do, but reasonably, you may not do it, like the salt shed. You may feasibly be able to put a food pantry there, but you reasonably wouldn't do such a thing. I think that word is a little concerning, where I think you could use it to Legislator Cahill's point, a little too broad. Legislator Uchitel.
Thank you. So I actually think if Legislator Sperry wanted to just make the point that the consideration is enough of an out, I think that would be sufficient. And I would use the analogy of the fact that, or maybe not analogy, but the consideration is a process that we should go through when we're building any structure. And I think, you know, I'll kind of make another point that I was going to make later, but I'll say it here. I personally don't think that this legislation should need to exist, but it does, because we have failed as a society to ensure that everyone knows where their next meal is going to come from. And because of that failure, we should be forced to consider how we can remedy that at every moment. And so the awkwardness of having to consider whether it's appropriate for someone to go to a food pantry at a salt shed and then to conclude that you don't have a salt, you know, a food pantry at a salt shed, that process is maybe a process we should go through. Just like the war memorial in front of the county office building that we kind of can't walk through very smoothly, it actually is kind of in our way for a reason. You have to walk through at an angle because it should cause you to consider the impact of war in our society, the same way going through this exercise should cause us to consider the failure that we have in society, that folks don't know where their next meal is coming from. So while I think that that would be sufficient out, that it's a consideration, perhaps it's just things that are open to the general public, if that would make people more comfortable.
Yours is still off time.
Sorry, you still on this?
Chairperson.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm actually just talking myself into even more support as is, and the reason even further to build on what Deputy Majority Leader Uchitel just said is that even that word feasible, Legislator Cahill, is going to be Legislator Gavaris, and to the concerns that Legislator Cahill brought up, it's going to be left up to the legislature that receives the funding request to determine whether or not it's reasonable or feasible, right? Like this, that explanation is going to accompany the funding request for the project. So at the time you're being asked to build the salt shed, they're going to be saying why they can't put a pantry, but maybe that legislature will say, well, can you put a garden that could fill a pantry somewhere else? Or maybe that legislature will just say, that's fine. So I think, you know, forcing us to consider the question is novel and unfortunate, but a good idea. So I've come full circle to being good with the broadness.
Legislator Maloney's got his hand up also, so I don't know if you want to wait or...
On topic.
Well,
on topic. It's just slightly on this part of the topic.
It's on the shoulder of the road, not the middle of the road.
Yeah. I'm going to go anyway.
You go.
Thank you. So I'll say my concern that I had, that I still have, is, and I totally support this in concept, I'm afraid of it not having teeth. That how are we going to really make sure this happens? So what I would request is something that says, similar that we did to the environmental standards, that it gets reviewed by whatever committee is reviewing, but that it needs to go somewhere and be seen by someone and be a part of the conversation of do you want to approve this or not approve it, and otherwise I just fear...
It's going to the legislature. It has to be presented to the legislature with the funding request.
So that means it comes to the legislature through the resolution? Okay.
Meaning, like, when the funding request goes in and is routed to all the committees, there's going to have to be an attachment that says we've considered this, and yes or no, and why.
Okay. I guess in the previous one, we actually specified that each committee would utilize this as a part of their assessment to approve it. I guess it is softly there because if it goes to the legislature, the difference, and I don't know how it's happening in. Energy and environment or others, whether they're using that checklist and actually deciding whether to approve things or not based on it. But I just want to make sure it really is used and applied and that people are having those conversations and it's not just kind of like a memorializing kind of resolution.
Ceremony?
It more or less is a memorializing resolution to ourselves. I agree with Legislator Cahill that it probably should be far more specific to certain types of projects. There are policies in every village, county, and town around the state that no one even knows about anymore, so they don't get followed. This does somehow come in at the end. I'm still confused about the logistics of it, but we got to be careful because as we look at the world's problems, if that's how we're going to solve them, by generically coming up with a memorializing resolution to ourselves, and we start adding these things to everything. I mean, if we want to have a plan for this, let's have a plan for it and let's go do it. But 10 years from now, how is the legislature going to use this? How are we going to use it? It's a consideration. It just seems like it sounds more functional than it is. To me, and if we're going to start doing this, you know, we could take all the big topics and just start not coming up with real plans and just throwing a consideration aspect onto every single action we take, and then we say, yeah, we considered it. I'm just not sure what it does. I have the same issues that Eve and Brian have as well, but it sounds good.
Okay.
Councilor Gordon.
With respect to with respect to Legislator Walder's point and the point on implementation, the one thing that struck me about the language and the intent that's being expressed is that this is in some ways analogous to SEAKER, where you have to consider, let's say, the environmental impact on air or water or traffic, and it's not that far of a leap to look at the impact on food security as a type of human environmental impact, like architecture or, you know, historic preservation. And therefore, one possibility would be to do this as part of the SEAKER process, just an add-on to the considerations we would take. One issue would be that SEAKER is done by Energy and Environment, and I'm not sure that's the committee that would want to review this, but it, in other words, that would put some process into the concern that where does this go? Well, we do have a process of a declaration of significance under SEAKER, so you may just want to put it on there and, as a process.
Thank you. That's it, Walter.
I appreciate that. I mean, I would like this to be required and be something like SEAKER. That said, if the sponsor is okay with it potentially being memorializing and not necessarily have the teeth, I'm going to support it. I do hope it gets used. I hope it's applied. I hope future legislatures take it seriously, but you know, if this was written as memorializing, I would have approved it. I would have, you know, voted in favor. So I guess we'll just have to leave it to future legislatures.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I think maybe we could request that the clerks, seeing this on the resolution, would send it to Energy and Environment for their additional review along the lines suggested by Council Gordon.
What's this?
That they would have the sheet of considerations from the project sponsor, from the department that's bringing forward the construction project, and it would go to whatever the committee of review is, probably Public Works, and they would look at it. But the clerks could also send anything that has this kind of consideration included as part of the deliberation to Energy Environment for that broader environmental social consideration.
I'd like to second Legislator Gordon's postponement to Energy and Environment Committee.
Is that what you're saying? All right. I'll just renew my objection to the word feasible. I understand, Chair Bartels, what you're saying, but I think, you know, just to, I don't often quote movie sayings, but I will quote this one. We're so focused on whether we could, we never stop to think whether we should. And I think the word feasible, that's what gives me pause, is they'd be so focused on whether something could happen, not whether it should happen. And I'm always thinking 10 years down the road, how could somebody interpret this language? I don't know what functionally, if you're agreeing that this is a stopgap to make us open our eyes and look at something and make us consider this as part of a project, and I don't know where the word reasonable changes that. And I guess more to the sponsor, but.
Just for clarity, are you saying if that word changes from feasible to reasonable that you'll support it?
Yeah, because I think it then makes it where you would consider it, and I think we should, I think projects should be considering it, but I mean, there are reasonable places to put things, and then there's feasible. Feasible, like I'd use a salt shed idea. The EOC, we could feasibly put it at the EOC, but reasonably, because of what goes on there, we really probably wouldn't want to put a food pantry at the EOC. Legislator Erner, I'm sorry.
Thank you. A couple of things. I'm hearing a lot of things that I had asked to also be a co-sponsor on this, and from that vantage, I would be interested to, if the author and the committee wanted to postpone, just to hammer out some of this stuff. But I also had a question through the chair to Planner Doyle. Does your department conduct anything around food security right now as a matter of course in your planning projects?
I think the short answer would be no, with some exceptions. There are exceptions when we look at certain types of housing projects, particularly with respect to affordable housing projects. So you're looking for community gardens in those areas, et cetera, for those projects when they're fully affordable. And we do look at those types of things as well as recreation facilities in those areas. The interesting thing here is the word in this resolution does use the word public. Most of those projects would not be open to the public using those gardens, but they would be open, obviously, to the residents using those gardens.
Thank you. Mr. Kaya.
Thank you. And if we do change that word to reasonable, I am okay with that, and I'll support that. Thank you.
So we'd have to amend on the floor, but if we can pass it then out of committee with the understanding that we'll amend on the floor, which Legislator Sperry, you can do to offer the amendment from.
I'd be happy to second.
Do we need legislation?
Feasible to reasonable. Yes. So.
Do we need legislator Hanks? That's also approval. She's a co-sponsor.
Yes, we can get that.
Okay.
She's an equal sponsor, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's got to be amended on the floor, no, so it doesn't matter if it is amended in this committee or not.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So then, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. All right. Resolution 98, confirm the appointment of Tony Roser.
I'll move it.
Second? Second?
A second.
Second. Chair Patel's discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Carried. Resolution 99, establishing capital. Second?
I'll second.
Second. Chair Patel's discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Resolution 100, authorizing replacement.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'm going to be opposed. Resolution 101, amended.
I'll move it.
Second? Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. Resolution 102, authorizing the purchase.
I'll move it.
Second? Second? Second?
He's
oh, okay. There you go, Brian. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
These are the vehicle, all the vehicles, and we're just bonding them all at once. Is that what's
happening? We're authorizing
bonding. What's
that? Chairman.
We're authorizing bonding. That doesn't mean they will bond, but we're authorizing bonding.
For vehicles, all at once, 1 million vehicles. Any of these budgeted for?
I would just say I don't have the list in front of me right now, but and maybe I don't know if someone over there on the executive side of the house can speak to it. We're still there's a tremendous amount of EV and hybrid EV vehicles in this list, which makes me really glad. But I noticed that they're not in the sheriff's department. Is that correct? We're still lagging on the sheriff's department.
We're just looking at the list and at about 40 total.
We can't
still not.
Just push it down. So sorry.
I confused it.
These aren't vehicles. These aren't
There's,
for the.
A total of 40 vehicles, 10 of which are for the sheriff's department. Which these are not indicated to be green fleet vehicles. So we're working on a capital project to install the infrastructure and continuing to do that. So it should be soon, so that all the appropriate charging stations are there for the sheriff. Can I ask, how are we I know that we have sort of automatic cycles where we replace vehicles based on their years in service and their mileage. Are we, if we're going to start transitioning to electric or hybrid electric for the sheriff, has anyone looked at whether or not delaying some new purchases of gasoline vehicles would make sense in anticipation of the transition?
Just for clarification, so you mean perhaps not buying all 10 this time in order to buy more the next time?
Yes, exactly.
I'm not aware of that. If they have gone through that, I haven't spoken with the fleet manager in detail if there's some kind of strategy or what the stated need was versus what is being requested.
Yeah, I mean, I would just, it's the thing that gives me pause on this because, the sheriff's fleet, we've discussed greening it, and I know the sheriff's open to this concept. I've had conversations, as I'm sure the exec office has. I just, we're aggressively moving toward a green fleet, but the sheriff's fleet is way behind. So making all the standard purchases in gasoline is just going to delay that even further. So I would hope that there's a critical evaluation of that.
And we could, I could discuss it with the fleet manager and see if there's some kind of plan here, and also with where we know we're going to be with charging infrastructure. And we could always, I don't think it's a very significant differential in cost, so it might be something we could even accommodate through the existing allotment of the 10 vehicles.
They're saying, Mommy.
Has the fleet manager been in any standing committee meetings? I'm under the impression that the fleet manager doesn't really attend the planning board meetings, which is the only place this exists in the capital plan and not in the budget, which it used to. These used to be in the budget. I know there's been, I know there are individuals I spoke to in planning that were told by Dennis Doyle that 75% of this would be in the budget. 0% is in the budget, and now we're bonding for a million of them. Am I incorrect that the fleet manager doesn't come to a lot of these meetings? Is that the fleet manager over at DPW? Are they over in DPW now? And they were originally, when we created in 2009 the fleet manager position, it was put in purchasing. They were supposed to go over take-home vehicles. They were supposed to make sure that we don't have 40 and 50 vehicle purchases. That's not what's happening now. And it no longer appears in our operating budget. This is after the charter, when we were supposed to get more efficient. I went back and looked, I printed out. These are things we used to get. This is the 2008 vehicle requests. All these specifics, capital financing, operating budget, and now what do we do in 2023 when we're supposed to be more efficient, when we have day-to-day operations taken care of by an elected executive, when the legislature is only supposed to be doing fund appropriating? We are literally just letting anyone that requests a vehicle get one. We went from, in one department, we went from 2 vehicles to 5. A couple departments are getting their first vehicle. When did we have any of these discussions? When has the fleet manager been in to explain? By the way, we had probation in a meeting a couple of months ago telling us they need different vehicles because they're breaking down the vehicles that they got, the hybrid or the fully electric vehicles, aren't cutting it. They've had to change their routes. They're not being able to do their job. It's not as simple as just, oh, are they green vehicles? Okay, well, could there be more green vehicles? Okay, let's do it. We're supposed to be having these discussions. This isn't working. This is work. We're getting worse and worse. By the way, with a fiscal cliff coming, shouldn't we be having the discussion about some kind of stipend? Take your mileage. Does everyone need a vehicle? It seems as though with the revolving door of executives, every single person that requested a vehicle got exactly what they asked for without a discussion outside the budget. And now we're bonding for this massive vehicle thing with all this sitting money. This is just... anyone that feels that we're doing a real good job here, I think, feels differently than me. I think that's fair to say, because I'm sure there's a couple of people that feel we're doing great, and this is fantastic. Not having anything in the budget, not budgeting for any of this. By the way, I think we budgeted in the capital project, it said 2.1, and this is what, 2.6? Nobody cares about $500,000 either. This should be postponed. We should kick it back, and we should do our due diligence.
Legislator Walter.
I'll defer to Chair Bartels.
I said Legislator Walter.
Okay. I'm glad we took a moment to look at this and think about this. And I'll go back to that green vehicle issue and the idea, and this has come up with a boiler, like anything that's going to last 10 years, we need to really think carefully about, because we're moving to needing to be free of these things. So I'm wondering about the exploration, and this does speak to what Legislator Maloney was saying, of any definitively needed vehicles, ones that are absolutely important and necessary, if they have to be a gas vehicle, can they be leased? Which means that we're only committed to maybe 3 years or 5 years, and then have that opportunity. Because I think we really shouldn't be buying anything now that has a 10-year minimum, you know, at least 10-year lifespan that relies on fossil fuel. But I'll just say, and I do think that a valid point was made, that really understanding how it is audited and determined when these vehicles are completely necessary. It has come up in other meetings before that some of these vehicles may not be completely necessary, and it would be important to understand how that decision is made. I think is it just like a computer? You just say you need one and you get one, or is there some kind of vetting process?
Legislator Nolan?
We did ask about this in the review in Public Works, and we're told that all these were very high mileage vehicles. But I think the idea of a potential lease is valuable. But they do wear out, and at some point you're paying more to maintain them and keep them running than you would pay if you purchase a new vehicle. And I think it is worthy of consideration that we do have a fleet that I think is now 75% hybrid or electric, which is hugely ahead of the goals that we had set for ourselves as a county. So having the policies that we've had has achieved goods, and doesn't mean we can't make the system even better, but I think we have been doing good.
Chair Bartels.
Yeah, so, I mean, these are issues that have been brought up many times over the course of my time being here. I'm not sure that it's accurate to say that 75% of our full fleet is hybrid or electric. Yeah, it seems very ambitious. I don't think we're anywhere near that based on, it may be in terms of this purchase, but in terms of our total fleet, I don't think we're anywhere close to that. I don't know, we don't have to dwell on it. I mean, I think that we're hearing a lot of different things. First of all, I do think there needs to be a conversation, and I suspect also based on some protest votes over time, that there needs to be a conversation about bonding for vehicles. That's something that many in this room have raised concern about. And just now, by default, putting them in the capital, that's a concern. We probably are ripe for a presentation on the fleet. Hearing things, it's always given me pause that mileage would be a standalone factor for retiring a vehicle. It's not a standalone factor for people with their personal cars. It depends on the life of the vehicles these days extend beyond, and I'm not suggesting we do anything unsafe. The take-home policy, I was the author of the Charlie Busick take-home policy, even though it says Charlie Busick, we put his name on it, but I'm the person that wrote it. And over the years, I've expressed concern, particularly with the Sheriff's Department, and it came up that now, because we've allowed certain things for so long, that it's a condition of employment, something that I think we need to have a conversation about and push, because having all those gas-powered vehicles go home to different people's homes on the argument, not with this sheriff, but with previous sheriffs, that somehow we could extend people's work on their commute doesn't really hold. And I agree very seriously with Vice Chair Walter that we need to really be thinking really seriously about any gasoline purchase for a regular vehicle. I know we're not there yet with the heavy equipment, wish we were, but to my understanding, doesn't exist right now in terms of big plow trucks and dump trucks and other heavy equipment. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of concerns being raised here. I don't know the urgency about this purchase. I mean, can someone speak to that from the executive side in terms of whether if it gets delayed a month for further presentations, what happens?
Shouldn't we have a fleet manager here to answer this one?
That should have happened in the Committee of Jurisdiction.
In the future, I think it's appropriate to have the fleet manager come and discuss the fleet purchase resolutions, because I can assure you that there's a form and documentation for each request, and she vets each request, and she looks overall at the needs and also the age and condition and what she knows of the maintenance records, because they keep all of that, because that's part of the operation for the fleet garage. There's some documentation that folks may not have seen that's provided annually in the Green Fleet Report that gives you a snapshot of what vehicles are coming out of the fleet, as well as what new purchases are being made and what the use is. There was quite a serious vetting of leasing several years ago, and it was found that we could not find, we put out an RFP for vendors to come back with proposals on leasing, and none of the responses provided a service or a model that were cost effective for the county, because we do have a generally good maintenance and of our fleet and the staff in the garage. And so because we are investing in that staff and that service, the leasing didn't provide value for us. But we exactly thought the same thing, that, you know, as we move vehicles through the fleet, and especially as we're looking at plug-in vehicles and electric vehicles, that would have been a more cost-effective option. So I think that's the points I wanted to respond to.
But can you just address Chair Bertel's question of, is this urgent, or can we postpone this?
I knew there was one I was forgetting. I'm sorry. I know that, do you have more on that?
Just on several of the vehicles, it's worth noting that the changes from the 32 that were requested in the capital budget, the additional 8, 3 of which are going to be related to emergency management, and the additional EMS workers that we are looking to hire. There's an additional vehicle for fleet management, actually for their tow truck, which is 26 years old and is starting to experience failure, which will impact our ability to be able to basically collect other vehicles as they go down on the road. And then also there's another additional vehicle for the Human Rights Department based on robust conversations that we had with the director, as well as with the, during the legislature review process, where we feel that it may be appropriate for Human Rights to have an additional vehicle to be able to respond to human rights complaints that will. But that gets you to your additional vehicles that are being requested that were not included in the capital improvement plan.
I'm sorry, Liz Tim Lone was first.
But I didn't get an answer to the question.
I'm sorry. That's as far as time sensitivity, there's a, throughout the year, the build out date is something that is important and difficult to make sure that we're in place to put in orders for vehicles, because if we miss the build out dates, then we are effectively into the next year because of trying to get vehicles. And it is also right now fairly challenging to get vehicles. So that's been a problem recently as well. So there is some time sensitivity to it.
So I've heard a lot of different things. Actually, just texting with some people over at DPW, it says they're down to one Central Auto employee. One of the mechanics took a lateral move. Another one's out on disability. So as far as the leasing, because we're so strong in the garage, I'm not sure how accurate that is. I'm still not sure why we can't budget. Why can't we budget this? We're in March, and we have to get surprised by this with more vehicles that aren't even here. We could budget before the charter. We did. They were in the budget. They were scrutinized better than they are now. And I'm not sure everyone needs a vehicle. I'm sure a lot of people don't need take-home vehicles. That was the job of the fleet manager, who's now ordering parts and getting calls from the people over at DPW. They're not even a true fleet manager anymore, the way the fleet manager position was created in 2009 when they were in personnel. But we've changed all that. We've moved these people around. I think her office has moved a bunch of different times, and she's probably got a lot of other work to do than the work that we think she should be doing. Why we don't see her in these things. I'm not saying she's doing a lot of work, but she's basically working in DPW, not for the entire fleet. We just don't have a plan. And we're supposed to, this county is a business with compassion, and we just don't have that approach. I know there's a couple of business owners here, and I'm sorry, I'd like to give every one of my employees a car, you know, but I can't, you know. There's mileage. I've worked in the state for a while. I got mileage. Do we have to have all these vehicles? And let me tell you something, people are going to drive more when it's not their car, when gas is being paid for, and they're not just getting mileage. At some point, we got to tighten the belt, and we just got to be real, you know, real bosses, real legislators, real executives, and looking how we used to do things to how we're doing things now, not budgeting for anything, 40 vehicles at the same time. That's another reason you have a fleet manager, so you're not buying a massive amount of vehicles in 1 year like this. And the bonding aspect is absolutely absurd, as we have conversation after conversation after conversation about all this sitting money. This is just a prime example of true inefficiency in our county.
Chair Bartow.
Yeah, I felt like I needed a clarification, but now I can't even remember. But one clarification was the human rights edition. Is it a second vehicle for human rights? But it would be a dedicated vehicle for
dedicated vehicle for human rights.
They're first,
correct.
But I mean, rather than utilizing a pool, like that decision was made.
The issue with the pool vehicles is we only have two, from the fleet manager, we only have two vehicles available for fleet use amongst departments that don't have dedicated vehicles. So the concern there is that there would not be enough fleet vehicles available to the Human Rights Commission for use to be able to respond.
Legislator Walter.
Thanks. And I want to circle back on the leasing. I recognize 3 years ago you looked at it. It could be different. We pulled up quickly a website that was municipal leasing vehicles. Given what's happening at DPW, it might be even more relevant now. So I wouldn't want what happened 3 years ago to prevent looking into it now.
Legislator Walter, on the leasing, there's been a robust conversation amongst several counties on using Enterprise, which is the major vendor in this area. We looked at it, I believe, in 2017, 2018 for the county, and we decided it was not for us at that time. There are a number of counties that really love this approach, and there are a number of counties that had and flagged some serious concerns, and I think a lot of it has to do with their own individual operations. So I think it'd be worth us possibly considering it. We'll definitely take a look at it. But
yeah, I'll just say the one that was found was GM, who was doing municipal leasing. So maybe more options are on the table.
Mr. Maloney?
Does Tyrone Wilson walk to work? I mean, how do all of us get around? It's almost sounding elitist. We're concerned with this pool of vehicles we have, that somebody may have to get in their own car and drive somewhere to do their job. We're talking about people making 80, 90. I love Tyrone. He does a great job. A great job. We're talking about people that make $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year, and we can't just give them mileage, maybe even a stipend. We got to have these pools of people. Why does the executive need a car? It's absolutely absurd that the conversation, that we're never having a conversation about less and less and less vehicles. And you know what? You got a good paying job with a great retirement, great benefits. Drive your freaking car to wherever you need to go for your county business. Fill out mileage if you want to get it. Believe me, the mileage comes out to more than you're actually spending. but at some point we got to get real. I just can't believe I'm hearing, well, you know, there might be a time where somebody might not have an actual county vehicle to jump into and drive around. They might actually drive their own car to go do their job.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I think it's fine for us to have this conversation. I'm not sure why we're having it now and in this forum. I also think it's inappropriate to call out an individual. And to the extent that we have had that happen, I would say that for us to fully support our human rights work, we need to have the director of that department be able to respond to a very large county where somebody could call in a complaint, and the best way to understand what's happening is to go there. And I think it's up to the individuals to ask for what they need. It's up for the fleet manager to evaluate all that, and it is up to us to do oversight. And we do have a resolution about this in front of us, so let's plan to do the oversight. But are we learning anything that will help us know what we should do with this time-sensitive resolution?
Commissioner Roberts.
The time to do the oversight was probably last month. I mean, you know, talking about human rights, it's in the falls under laws and rules, and I was away for a month. I don't know if we talked about it then, Jonathan, Chairman Hefner. Probably not. No, not on our agenda. Didn't we have a very rigorous budget debate about giving more money to human rights for mileage expense, and now we're going to, without our consent or asking us about it, we're going to give them a car. I can support a much smaller package, but not one to this degree.
Can I just clarify, Deputy Executive? You're saying that if we postpone a month, that will equate to a delay of months. Well, I didn't want to be that liberal with my saying, but yeah, I mean, that's what I heard. I just want to clarify.
We're close. I know it's something that needs to go through in the spring. If it's into late spring, into summer, then that poses a lot of problems with the build-out dates. But I can try to check that now.
Okay, because I mean, I will just say, Legislator Mahoney's correct on a lot of these things, and to Legislator Roberts' point, this is one of those things that we put money aside purposely. I would be interested to know how many times that any department has requested to use a vehicle and it has not been available. I mean, the justification here is that there's no vehicle available. Well, how many times did that happen? So that would be, you know, a month I don't think is unreasonable to wait. Chair Bridges.
Yeah, so a couple of things, and our clerk's looking at what month these requests came in years past. I mean, it's a fair point about picking on a certain department, but I think it's not actually picking on a certain department. The reason we're talking about a certain department is we just heard from the acting commissioner of finance about a vehicle purchase that none of us knew about. And to understand that, it goes back full circle to Legislator Maloney's comment about how this isn't part of the budget process. It's a capital, there's a capital program for vehicles, it just says vehicles, and this happened, you know, at some point in our relatively recent history, and then it's, rather than us talking about what vehicles and hearing about vehicles within departments in relation to committees of oversight, we get this one lump project that's big and that's bonded and has a big number, but we haven't had those conversations. We haven't discussed the need, and we believe that the executive's office and the fleet manager are doing that due diligence. But I think what we're hearing now is that we're more than ripe for an updated presentation. And Deputy Executive Lavalle, everybody's, you know, stated that the fleet manager in future would be here to talk about these things. But I think what we're going to need is a presentation from the fleet manager to really understand the scope of the fleet and how these decisions get made. So again, I think it's bigger than picking on one department. It's the surprise of, for the first time right now,
hearing of this anomaly in relation to one department that has a cost that we're being asked to approve. So maybe we can, if I can just, I'm not sure, maybe we can move on from this and come back to it when both the deputy county executive and the commissioner of finance and our people find out when last month, because I just want to state that we're going to need to start session on time at 7 for the public hearings, and that will mean that, and I fully anticipate this is what's going to happen, we're going to need to, depending on where we are in this meeting or in caucus, we'll start our meeting on time, we'll do the beginning of the meeting, we'll have our public hearings, and then we will recess to continue whatever unfinished work is done at this point. So I just want everyone to be aware of that, because we can't have the public who's expecting to come to a public hearing waiting for 2 hours in the context of a Zoom. So just so everyone's aware. So if we're not ready to vote on this, maybe there's a way to move for right now and come back to this. I don't know.
Legislator Maloney.
I just, real quick, just because it was put out there that we're picking on the human right, I have the same issue with all the vehicles. It was just that was one example that was put out there. I put my relationship with human rights up with any legislator. I dare anybody to ask of that as well. But that was just one of many. You know, there were departments that went from having two vehicles to five vehicles to, I mean, and it just needs to be put in the budget. So I hope we do kick this back, and I hope we kind of dissect and go back 10, 15 years and look back at pre-charter and how much more diligence was put into these vehicle purchases. And I hope we have an overall conversation about how many vehicles. Phil and I talk about it 3 or 4 different meetings we bring up. It's always about green, 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 but it's never about how many vehicles we actually have and how many vehicles we actually need as well.
I say, Walter.
If I was on Ways and Means, I'd make the motion to kick it back. I don't know if
so, I feel comfortable making the motion to postpone this. I heard from Deputy Executive Laval that we're coming close to where it's too late, but not that it is too late, that this is it, that we wouldn't want to postpone it much past next month, but you're nodding your head yes, that you're comfortable with that. Yeah, and I would just say, though, I'd want us to be very clear what we would want to see at next month's meeting to be able to move this forward. I'm putting a motion to postpone, but I'm requesting that before we vote on it, we make the clarifications as to what we would want if people do vote that way.
Chair Bartel, a second.
I was just going to say that the clerks, just for a frame of reference, told me that this resolution came before us in 2022 in February, in 2021 it was May, and in 2019 it was April.
So, will you second?
Do you have a second? Do you feel comfortable? Okay. Yes, I will second postponing this.
Okay.
Wait, is this both of them?
Hold on. We're gonna do. Let's just do this one.
I didn't actually say which one I was doing.
Well, we're on 102. On we'll have to reconsider 101. So let's just do this first. So, all those in favor?
Director Barnes?
Yes.
Before we do that?
Yes.
Director Barnes?
Yeah.
Can we just make sure that any kind of information that is disseminated gets to the entire legislature, not just the, I guess it will be laws and rules? Thank you.
No.
No.
It'll be public works, but yes, I think.
I postponed it. The wording I gave brings it back here. If you're asking me to make a motion to send it back to committee, that's a different story.
No, I think
brings it back here.
Well, it should go back to DPW as well, should it?
It doesn't. It was.
It's already passed out of DPW. Passed
yeah. But you can still send it back to a committee that would be asking.
Right now we're on the bond. Let's just get through this. Let's get through one thing at a time here. So all those in favor of 102, postponing for a month. Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
To the next meeting.
To the next meeting. Well, yeah. Next meeting. All right. All those in favor, aye. Post. So okay. All right.
Motion to reconsider.
Second.
101. Second.
Now discussion. You want to listen? F.J. Walker.
I mean, I'm willing to make the motion that it goes back to committee. I have the feeling we'll end up having to have these same conversations in Ways and Means as well. I guess maybe I would, whose chair is that committee?
Elizabeth.
So, we've answered our questions.
I don't know what more we do.
Okay, then I make a motion that we postpone it for a month to Ways and Means.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
So carried. Thank you. All right, 103, amending 2023-2020 capital improvement program. Can I have a second? Second. Okay, Cam. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 104, authorize purchase.
I'll move it.
Second.
This is highway.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'll be opposed. Resolution 106, authorizing a ticketing and accident system upgrade. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second it.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'll be opposed. 109, approving the execution of a contract.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 110, approving
the
second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 111, approving the execution.
I'll move
second?
It.
Second. I said Cam. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 112.
I'll move it.
Second. Okay, good. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 113.
I'll move it.
Second. Okay, yeah. All those discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? But carried. 114.
I'll move it.
Second.
Kale.
Awesome. Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'll be opposed. Thank you. 121. Approving the execution of a contract.
I'll move
second.
It.
Second.
Awesome.
Kale. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. There's some forthcoming resolutions. Comptroller Gallagher?
Yes. Thank you very much, Chair Gavars.
You had it.
Okay.
Vigilant Stewart, can we give her your mic? Can you give her your mic?
Thank you very much. I wanted to take the moment to tell you that we're pleased to announce the appointment of Charles Dinstall. He's here with us tonight as the new Director of Internal Audit and Control. Charles is a CPA with 8 years of public accounting experience. He comes from a background of audit of municipal and government entities. He lives here in Kingston. We're thrilled to have him just in time for the deep work that we'll be doing over the next few months. Thank you very much to this body for making the salary competitive. That made a huge difference in our ability to recruit for this position. I want to take a moment to address the Golnick allegations and share with you what I can. The County Comptroller's Office is continuing to work on our real property tax collection audit. We have already made internal control recommendations to the administration that will be in final form by Thursday of this week. We are reviewing cash collections, and we are sharing information and collaborating with appropriate state and local oversight and criminal justice authorities. That is all I can say on the matter at this time. On the audit side, we have a snapshot of short-term rental occupancy tax collection that is going to go out tomorrow or Thursday. It shows 900 properties not in compliance with your occupancy tax law. Our initial real property tax collection audit is with management, and we expect to have comment from them back by the end of the week. We hope to have that report to you in final form early next week. And we will be kicking off an audit of IDA and solar pilots that are also calculated by the finance department. Now, I want to share one ray of good news with you. Ulster County closed out 2022 with $165 million in sales tax revenue. That is compared to $143 million budgeted. And we have a report coming out on that soon, so you should look for that in your inboxes. So far in January, collections continue to be very robust. January collections are already 17.65 above the same period last year. So right now the economy is ticking along and it is definitely helping on the revenue side. Happy to answer questions on the audits or anything that I can.
The 900 short-term rentals not in compliance, I assume, are VRBO, HomeAway, other things than...
That is correct.
And it, do you
there may be Airbnb payers also who are not in compliance, but we are getting the revenue from those properties. So there may be properties listing on Airbnb who are not registered to pay occupancy tax, but we are still getting revenue.
I thought Airbnb collects and it's done.
They collect and remit, but those properties are still required to file quarterly returns regardless.
So we're getting the money, though, as far as Airbnb?
From Airbnb properties, we're getting the money. I can tell you that the estimated lost revenues, given the 900 properties, is a wide-ranging amount, but the minimum base is about $65,000 a year and could be as high as over $1 million.
Have we looked into other states, other counties, if these other smaller companies are entering into these agreements yet?
They don't do it as a matter of policy, unfortunately. Yes, one of my recommendations is any opportunity to enter into a collection agreement we should participate in.
How can the range be so drastic between $65,000 to $1 million?
I know. It's a very difficult. It's not actually our estimate. It's the estimate that comes from the third-party compliance firm that we hire to monitor the system, to monitor online listings. That's their estimate. I am not really, able to justify the $1 million revenue estimate, but I will say that the $65,000 low base estimate would cover an expansion of that contract to move enforcement generation of letters and tracking to the outside third party, and I think that is a strong recommendation that we would have at this time, especially given the other responsibilities that the finance department is going to be taking on. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make that motion.
Second. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
So carried. Thank you.
I think we have a question from